Hi, this is John Ryan with Team Handball News, and joining me again as usual is Krister All. Krister, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay, John, and I'm just, you know, getting a bit concerned about our track record here as prognosticians. I mean, people might start losing confidence in us and wondering why we are wasting their time on speculating about upcoming games.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and first, once again, potential advertiser out there, if you want to advertise with this Handball Expert podcast, please let me know. We will do a short little advertisement for your product, especially if you're trying to get rid of that stickum before the IHF does away with it. You know, you might want to put a nice little advertisement at Team Handball News. So if you are interested, drop me a line at john.ryan@teamhandballnews.com. And, well, Krister talks about anybody who listened to our women's preview yesterday. We said there was a 1 in 10 chance of Netherlands reaching out and knocking Brazil out. And what do you know? That 1 in 10 happened this morning, didn't it, Krister?
It did, but I guess I'm not totally embarrassed about having said 1 in 10, because I did say that, you know, as I've done earlier in the tournament, that I see Brazil being a very strong and competent team, but a team that could get carried away, that could lose their nerves, that could feel more negative than positive pressure from the crowd and so on, and that then they might end up being lost and losing their style and rhythm. And I guess that's what happened this morning.
That's exactly what happened. Netherlands just took them out of their game, didn't they? Nice defense.
Yeah.
And consistent scoring. And, you know, if you look at some of the earlier games where that crowd was, you know, rocking, that never got a chance to really get started there this morning at the Future Arena.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about, well, it's a shame, you know, Brazil, if they do get out of the tournament, it'd be a shame because they have that exciting style of play, whereas a team like France, with their plodding, methodical play, they're boring to watch. And, boy, we got to that second game this morning, that looked like France was going to go out the door too, and our predictions were really looking bad.
Well,
tell me what you thought about what happened.
Well, I guess the only reason I can think of is that I must have heard that you and I believed in them, and that they therefore really desperately felt that they needed to prove our point for us. But no, I mean, when I couldn't watch the first part of the game, but when I tuned in and saw 12-5 to Spain, I thought, well, forget it. Should I even bother to watch the rest? But, I mean, as you were saying, I mean, that French boring machine-like style, they were grinding them down and managed to catch up before the regulation time was over.
Yeah. And even though they do have that plodding, methodical style, that was one heck of a game to watch there. That comeback and those overtime, or as they say in handball world, extra time periods. That was quite the game to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out to be really exciting. And I mean, it was sort of, I mean, we call the French boring or methodical, and Spain a little bit more happy-go-lucky. But I mean, the combination of the two styles sort of made for some excitement after all.
It certainly did. Moving along to the men's quarterfinals coming up tomorrow.
Yeah.
I guess we'll stick our noses out there again and talk a little bit about what we think might happen. Yeah, but first, let's go over a little bit of what happened in Group A. First, we'll look at Group A, how it up. Croatia, as we alluded to, I guess, a little bit, they woke up after sleepwalking through their first two games to end up taking the pool. They tied with the same number of points as France, but they, courtesy of their victory over France, they ended up first in Group A. Denmark ended up third in the group with 6 points. And Qatar was able to knock off Argentina for that fourth spot last night. So they will be the fourth team in the group. And then Argentina and Tunisia failed to qualify. Well, let's talk a little bit about those two teams briefly. Tunisia, they did not have a good tournament, did they?
No, I think they have carried on for too long trying to rely on some of their veterans, and their team simply wasn't strong enough. I'm a little bit surprised because they did well in the African qualifying, and it seemed like they might have a chance in this group. But no, I mean, the reality is that the fight for the final quarterfinal slot was really an appropriately turn out last night, precisely between Qatar and Argentina instead.
Well, I'll just put in a couple points about Tunisia. Not only did they do well in African qualifying, they're the first, well, I take it, first men's team, not from Europe, to win an Olympic, you know, win a spot in an Olympic qualification tournament.
That's
which,
correct,
which
yes.
Which is something to be said there, and basically proof or validation that they are as good as the lower-tier European sides, because they knocked off a lower-tier European side to make it to the Olympics.
Correct.
And, you know, I know your favorite player, Issam Tej, is still playing for Tunisia.
Sort of, yes.
you know, they do have that tall backcourt player. What's his name? Jalou. He's a decent player. They really just never, you know, performed the way that they needed to in order to make it through. And that can be said, you know, that they finished last for a reason. Let's talk a little bit about Argentina. And to me, I thought their performance in the tournament was a big surprise. And I guess, you know, the way I looked at it, without Diego Simeone, they were they're just a collection of guys that are pretty decent players coming together. And they're going to put together some credible games, but they're really – I didn't see them winning a single competition. And, boy, I guess my assessment was incorrect there, wasn't it?
Well, you know, the other two Simeone brothers really tried to lift their game to sort of make up for their the star of the family being absent. And they have several other good players. And, of course, in some games – Schultz, the goalkeeper, really made a difference. But I was still disappointed yesterday after what I had seen from them and Qatar earlier in the tournament. I thought they had a pretty good chance last night with a sort of younger and seemingly fitter team. But they were much of the time pretty lost and made lots of mistakes and therefore got behind and resorted to desperate shooting. So that was to me a letdown. That shows that they do not yet have the stability when it comes down to it.
Yeah, and they've got a couple guys that you know, are getting a little bit older, but they're still fairly young. And I guess I look at it from a parochial American standpoint of, hey, you know, this is one of the teams that we need to catch up to. And they did pretty well without their star player. And I really wonder how well they would have done with Diego playing. I think if you add him, and they play the same game, I think they beat Croatia in that close game. I think they beat Qatar last night.
Yeah, there would have been more stability and more confidence. So I think you are right.
So, unfortunately, they didn't get, but they certainly gave themselves a good accounting for the tournament. Let's look at the four qualifiers. Let's start again from the bottom. Qatar, not playing at home. not quite the performance that they had at the World Championships.
And not getting as much help from the referees either.
Oh, well, no, come on. You're not. Well, it's not like anything untoward has happened. They've done studies that officials do have a home crowd bias, even if they don't really necessarily like the home crowd.
Exactly.
So maybe that was part of it. They looked pretty good at times, but at other times, particularly against France, they did not impress at all.
No.
So I guess going into the we'll talk a little bit more about the specific matchups. I would still say that they're somewhat of a dangerous team if they put their act together, and you know, the key, I think the key for them is that they just don't have enough depth to you know, to put together three big wins for a gold medal, so to speak, in a knockout tournament.
No, that's their weakness. And on the other hand, I think a lot, well, I mean, of course, they have two stars as far as I'm concerned. And one is the coach, Rivera. And the other one who can really make the difference, and that was part of the recent last night, is, of course, Saric, the goalkeeper.
Yeah, he's a difference maker.
When he is on, you know, then any team in the quarterfinal or even beyond that could go crazy in trying to beat him.
Well, let's do a short aside. Where do you rank the current goalkeepers in the world right now? Who do you think is the best keeper in the world?
Well, I probably would pick Saric.
Okay.
I mean, we have Maier, who, to my mind, is beginning to look a bit sort of not over the hill exactly, but as if he is not quite as sharp and brilliant as we have been spoiled seeing him in the past. And of the others, well, Schmal, of course, is a key player for Poland, but a bit the same there as with Umair. So, yeah, I would go with Saric.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if I'm quite ready to say that, but I do agree that Umair is, if you're looking at a slope, he's on the downward slope of a long, distinguished career. I don't know how far down that slope he is on the tail end, but he's no longer at his peak. So I think it depends on the game as to who's the best keeper in the world.
I mean, that's goalies always have this tendency to be more up and down and sort of be absolutely unbeatable in one game rather than being sort of just steady game after game.
Sure. You know, we could talk about Denmark, France, and Croatia. I'm going to wait a little bit to talk about those teams, I think, until we get to the until we look at the matchups of who they're playing next round. Other than to say that France is just kind of going through the motions, getting through the group play to a certain extent, the way they've been resting some of their players. I think they could have won that game against Croatia if they put their mind to it. And they just kind of put whoever they wanted to out there against Denmark and were able to end up winning against Denmark in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too many brilliant comments from the group games about those three teams. They did what they needed to do, and now we have to look ahead instead.
Yeah, and Croatia really woke up. So they're, you know, we were ready to write them off at the halfway point. And, you know, I think people are really, you know, keying in on this Team Handball News podcast. They're listening to it. They're using it as motivation to get themselves going for their upcoming games.
Yeah, I mean, teams might soon pick up on their idea of hiring us to badmouth them.
All right. Well, let's take a look at Group B. And how the standings ended up there. Germany and Slovenia were level on 8 points, but courtesy of Germany's victory over Slovenia, Germany finished first in the group. Brazil, the home team, they had a 2-1-2 record, five points overall for third place. Poland, which looked like they might be out of it, was able to string together some victories and take the fourth spot in the pool with a 2-0-3 record. And then we have Egypt and Sweden not being able to work their way out of it. Let's talk about Sweden. I guess they were able to get a win.
Well, let's not talk about Sweden too much. They were as feeble as, you know, I was a little bit facetiously saying when we last spoke. And I guess it's good for them that they got a win in the final game. But they are the only European team who didn't make it to the quarterfinal. And I think that speaks for itself. They are terribly disappointed and worried about whether they were hanging on to the two veteran coaches for too long, or and then also how long a rebuilding period they might need to get a strong team together again.
Yeah, they're a little thin on talent. You know, they brought back Anderson, who's kind of aging a bit.
Yeah,
they need to kind of think about what they want to do future wise. With their team, and you know, I already made fun of the dual coaching situation.
I think also, I mean, it sort of seems that it depended too much on the absence of one key player, Kjellman, as a circle runner, because they didn't have any good options there, and it meant that their attack became too predictable and too monotonous, and led to too many mistakes. So.
They did bring along a couple of younger players. Nielsen, who's just 19.
Yeah.
He's definitely got a future. If they want to do a Lord of the Rings remake, he can play Legolas, I guess, the elf.
Yeah.
Don't know how much you follow that, but he's definitely looks like that player. And then Tolbring also is a solid wing. So
Sten Malm is probably, and I guess in the backcourt, Kim Andersson now definitely out. Jakobsson is likely to take over the lead role. So
sure.
they have a few players to build a team around,
yeah.
And that's for sure.
So a disappointing tournament for sure for them, and their win last night, somewhat meaningless. Brazil locked into that third spot, didn't play their heart out, so to speak. The other African side, also not qualifying for the finals. Probably a frustrating tournament for them. Not probably, but I'm sure a frustrating tournament. They certainly showed that they can play with the top teams. I mean, they lost by one to Slovenia, beat Sweden by one. Poland, which needed a big victory, you know, they blew them out by 8 goals.
That was the key game that really decided things in that group, that Poland were desperate enough and solid enough tactically that they could outwork and outsmart the Egyptians, and left them without enough open stadiums.
And I was going to look this up later. I'm actually looking it up right now for Egypt. El Amar, he is. I really like watching him play. He is a hard-nosed player. And right now I'm looking up where he has played previously. He's 32, not that big. But man, he is the heart and soul of that team. And he did. He played, I guess. He played for Flensburg for like half a season. But other than that, he has been in Egypt the whole time.
That's what I thought also. Yes.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed watching him play. When a player that size you know, still kind of, you know, he kind of carried that team at times, but, you know, unfortunately Egypt not able to make it through. And the other four teams, I guess Poland's the survivor, able to come through in the end. We almost had written them off after their two disappointing games, but they came back with the victories over Egypt, tied Brazil, or I'm sorry, not tied Brazil, beat Poland in a close matchup, and then lost to Slovenia on the last day, 20-25, after being tied at halftime, 13-13. I guess we can talk a little bit about, we'll talk a little bit about them with their matchup. They're relying on some old guys, but they were able to get the job done, I guess, in the end, group play-wise.
Yeah, that's how I would put it, too. I mean, they know each other and play well as a team, and when they get the steam up, I mean, they can do reasonably well, but I still don't think that they're as good as they were in the last few years.
No, I think they're going down a little bit, and they need to bring along some younger players, and I don't really see that younger player emerging for them right now. Let's move on to the quarterfinal matchups and talk about each of those. We can talk about the top teams that we haven't talked about as much yet. First up on tomorrow morning, Wednesday, we got France versus Brazil kicking off the quarterfinals. What's your thoughts about that matchup?
Well, of course, it would be intriguing if suddenly the Brazil men's team would be the ones carrying the flag here for the host country and come up with a sensational win, because it really would be a sensation, I think, if they managed to win that game. I mean, they have the capacity in many ways, but I think the French team is just too solid. So I'm pretty convinced that the French will pull that one off after all.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. The odds makers, yeah, in terms of winning the whole tournament, France is almost even money. They're 11-10 in some of the online books. So they are definitely the big favorite. And like I alluded to earlier, they've been kind of, not kind of, they've been experimenting, if you will, I think, in some of these games with some of the player combinations they have out there. They're not as strong as they used to be, though. And they really rely on Karabatic and Omeyer to carry the day.
Yeah.
But if you're going to have two guys to rely on, those are the guys I'd want to rely on.
Except, as we said, that Omeyer perhaps isn't quite as reliable as, or hasn't so far had any of those absolutely brilliant games that he used to have with quite some regularity in the past.
So that
could be turn out to be an Achilles heel for them. But no, I still.
I have not. I should have checked this earlier. But is Abalo nursing an injury of any kind? Why hasn't he played?
I really haven't.
I mean, he played the first couple games. I'm just wondering, you know, why he's played. He didn't play at all two games ago, and I can't remember if he played at all yesterday. So I mean, and Narcisse, the same thing. Now Narcisse is getting a little bit older, so
yeah.
That I think was a strategic move by Onesta, just to keep him fresh. I will joke sometimes that it's almost like if you know Karabatic has annoyed me at times, especially with the betting scandal. But I've seen him play so many times, I almost feel like you could take Gary Hines and put him next to Nikola Karabatic, and he would turn him into a star. It's almost like they can stick anybody at left and right back next to him, and those guys are going to do well just because he sets other people up so well.
Yeah, that, I mean, more and more that seems to have become his relative strength. I mean, it doesn't all depend on him shooting or breaking through any longer.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, you know, Adrian DePanda, I remember seeing him play. I'm like, wow, he's halfway decent in the French league, but bam, put him on the national team next to Karabatic, he's a star. Same way. Greby, he looks like he's coming along as a pretty good player, but, you know, Negesan, I never had seen him play before. And, shoot, what's the other guy's name? Oh, well, yeah, Port has been around a little bit, but again, yeah, these guys haven't been, you know, the type of player that a German league or somebody else is looking to sign. They're playing on the lower tier teams in the French league. I guess as goes Karabatic, so goes the French team. Like I said, they're a big favorite, and again, I don't see them losing to Brazil. But like we've learned, stranger things have been known to happen.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so that's the first game. The next game is Qatar versus Germany. We talked a little bit about Qatar, but we haven't talked a whole lot about Germany. What do you think of this German side? Are they a team that can make it to the final?
I think they very well could. I mean, you know, like I was commenting last time, I like this team in many ways better than some of the ones the last 10, 20 years who were more dominated by some star players, and there wasn't always this sense of team spirit or coordination. And now I think they're playing as a team, one for all for one, sort of. I don't think they're so inexperienced that they will suddenly collapse under the pressure as they now move on to quarterfinals and presumably beyond. So I don't think they will be too rattled by Qatar. And, of course, they have a good goalie also. So, no, I'm confident both that they will beat Qatar and that they would have a chance beyond that.
Yeah, I think that they should take care of Qatar. I guess the only things, well, a couple things. If Sarge plays out of his mind, that could keep him in the game. And, you know, the two backcourts, Capote and Markovic, if they have really good games and they can shoot over the wall, then they can definitely hang with them. I just don't think that Qatar has the depth to do that. But then, you know, like I said, it's a battle of two really good coaches, Rivera and Sigurdsson. And I think if Qatar had been matched up maybe against another team, they might be able to surprise. But against Germany, I think that the Germans will prevail, setting up a match versus France, which would be really interesting. But you know what? Based on our prognostication for the women's game, I'm not going to go too far into semifinal matchups.
No. I mean, I'll just say that Germany and France, that's always, you know, a tremendous rivalry in handball and very exciting matches. Not necessarily always as beautiful handball, but it's one game that I would very much want to see if that comes to be.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the other bracket where we've got I'm saying afternoon game for us here in the U.S., which is, isn't that nice for a change? Europeans having to, you know, stay up in the middle of the night to watch games, and we've got all the best times to watch all these tournament games.
Absolutely.
Doesn't happen very often, but I'm not complaining.
No, not at all.
So we got Denmark versus Slovenia. And we talked a little bit about Slovenia. I am going to say, well, that Slovenia is this year's or this Olympics Iceland. You know, small country, 2 million people. I'm not sure how they're doing it exactly, but you know, you talked about the Germans playing together as a team.
Yep.
These Slovenians are really playing together as a team.
Yeah, that is their strength. And also, you know, I was I've been a bit skeptical. I mean, because there, which I've seen in the same role with other teams and with less success. And here, of course, he is as agitated and sometimes angry as ever in the past. But he seems to have them sort of, you know, well coordinated and well motivated, and so I'm pretty pleased that I, you know, insisted earlier on a few days ago that Slovenia would be able to keep it up. And I guess my view is that with Denmark not being as impressive as I had thought they would be, and Slovenia now clearly being stronger than we had expected.
Christian,
to my mind, this is the by far the most uncertain and quarterfinal in terms of whom to pick and for what reason.
Christian, I want to do a little sidebar on the coach. I'm going to butcher his name. Veselin Vujovic?
Yes, that sounds pretty good.
Okay, so I know I've seen him around. I just pulled up his Wikipedia page. I'm looking a little bit more at him. Were you around when he was a player? Was he any kind of a
I was around when he was a player, but my particular, I shouldn't say fights, but, you know, frantic efforts to keep him under control. I remember going back to the Sydney Olympics, which is now 16 years ago, when he was also coaching and perhaps
it's kind of more volatile
than now.
It's kind of a – he's been a real journeyman, if you will. I guess he played at 84 and 88 Summer Olympics. I've seen him around at different times. He's coached since 95, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds about
so,
right.
So, yeah, I guess – yeah, he was a national team coach for Yugoslavia, Serbia, Vardar – and then I guess he's been in the Middle East some, and then finally to Zagreb into Slovenia. So he must be doing something right.
Yes, for sure.
I look at the Slovenia team, and my reference point is Vid Kvatnik, who plays for Montpellier and used to play down at the wing where he should be playing because he's not that big a guy. And you know some wings can make that your transition to play in the backcourt, and sometimes they do it just out of necessity because there's nobody else there that can play that right back position,
right.
Nothing against him as a player, but if he is your right back that you're going to, you're doing it with mirrors. Don't get me wrong. He's a good player. I like watching him and stuff. But I guess I go back to the old standby. You know, when if you're going to play pickup handball and you put the 14 players out there on the court, and you say, okay, you pick one, and then the other team picks one, the other team picks one. I don't think most of those Slovenian guys are getting picked until there's four or five of the other players' teams already picked. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I mean, there are no obvious standouts on the team, and it seems to vary from game to game who is the keeper for them also. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I mean, Dolonek's a solid player,
yeah.
And Bombak is. I just, there's a reason why none of them are playing. I wouldn't say none of them, but they're not playing on the top Champions League clubs for the most part. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
And Skoff is, I guess he's, you know, backup for Omer at Paris Saint-Germain. But, I'm just looking at their club page. I mean, at their team yep. page. Bomback. Other than Bomback, they're playing for second tier teams. I mean, yep. or lower end tier one teams. However you wanna define that.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to be facetious, but perhaps that has some advantages. It's not like quite like I'm commenting about Qatar, that they can concentrate on being year-round a national team under a top coach, and they don't have to worry about being distributed around Europe and expending their energy on national leagues and Champions Leagues. And perhaps it's a bit same with the Slovenians, that precisely because they don't get burnt out by playing in key roles on the absolute top teams, that they have more to give when they come back home and play for the national team.
Yeah, and I think being a smaller country too, your roles are clear. You've played with each other for quite a long time, so you get that cohesiveness, kind of like what Iceland has. Slovenia isn't a very large country; it's very compact. So I'm sure every single guy has known each other since they were teenagers.
Yep.
So, well, that being said, can this side knock off Denmark?
I think so, because Denmark, to me, I mean, well, sure, they qualified easily from their group, and I mean, it's not that they have been playing poorly exactly, but there hasn't been the same spark, there are a few of their players who one were used to seeing as really being each stars in their own right and melding into a strong team, who haven't been that impressive this time. Perhaps they have saved their energy now for the knockout games. I don't know, but I mean, I would give Slovenia a good chance, but I'm basically, as I started out, I see it sort of 50-50.
Yeah. I would say more 60-40 leaning toward Denmark. I still think Denmark has better quality players.
Yeah.
They don't play with the same cohesiveness, but like you said, maybe they are, you know, just gearing up for the real competition, the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And let's do another short aside on that. What's your feeling on the quarterfinal format? Do you like that, or do you think it would be better if they just took the top two teams from each group?
No, I think this makes sense, because, you know, the system for distributing the teams on the two groups is so awkward to my mind. While it can be a bit of a fluke which exact opponent you draw in the quarterfinal, I think this is a more fair system.
Yeah, I think so too in the end. I just kind of get a little bit of annoyed a team like France just kind of going through the motions in group play. I say going through the motions, they're playing hard, but it's like they know they're getting through, and they know it's a crapshoot who they're going to play. They don't get too spun up about the outcome, I guess, once it's clear that they're through. I agree. I guess we're with the quarterfinal system. That's all right. Well, let's look at the last game. We got Croatia versus Poland. And like I said, we talked about that a bit. Who would have thought Croatia would have been the top team in the group halfway through? But they've turned things around. They're looking pretty good. But what do you think? Do you think Poland can surprise?
Well, you know, I mean, if you look at it this way, that this is a group winner against a fourth-place team, you would think that it suggests that Croatia clearly should be the favorite here. And if they keep playing like they've done in the last couple of games, leaving aside the one against Tunisia that doesn't count for much, I think they should be seen as the favorite. But, you know, this might be the situation that finally wakes the Polish team up and makes some of them realize that this is their last chance. And I think we will have a battle here.
Yeah.
Two different styles, but many veteran players and players who know each other have played against each other a lot. And my other messy game, a lot of wrestling where you wonder why whether we need a ball sort of with the rest of the activity going on there. But I mean, if I had to put money on a team here, I would put it on Croatia, I guess. But a Polish win wouldn't be a total shock to me.
Yeah, they're similar in style too, I think. You know, big teams, not super quick, and the players, for lack of better, they look almost interchangeable. Bunch of tall guys can shoot over and play solid defense inside. When you say last chance, are you implying that some of the Polish players are getting on a little age, and this is probably their last Olympics and their last chance to do something special as a national team?
Yeah, that's what I was after. I suspect that is likely to happen.
Yeah, and they are showing some age. Several players, 30 plus. Ecki's 34. Let's see, your Ecki is, one's 37, the other's 31. So, yeah, they are showing a little bit of age, and this may be their last swan song for some of those guys. Last Olympics, I would think, anyway.
Yeah, at least that.
Yeah. So, well, like I said, we don't want to dwell too much on a prediction. I won't project to the semifinals, but wow, if we can get some games like we saw between France and Spain today, we could have some real entertaining competition tomorrow going into the quarterfinals and then the semifinals.
Well, you know, that's my main hope, that we get some good propaganda for handball in the remaining games, and that at least we get, if not four, then three very close and exciting games tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, that being said, too, it would not surprise me if France doesn't mess around and gets that 4-5 goal lead over Brazil. Kind of seeing like what the Netherlands did today. Don't let the Brazilians hang around.
Exactly.
And the same thing with Germany. Maybe they can. Yeah, you could have some games that are blowouts. But like I said, let's hope we get some good games. And well, anyway, I'm looking forward to it. So, anyway, that sums up our preview of the men's quarterfinals. Thanks for listening. Again, we're on iTunes now, so you can load it into your iTunes player, and as soon as we post it, iTunes will put it right into your library, if you will. And feel free to leave a comment about what great prognosticators we are, and what excellent commentary we provide, or if you're inclined, you can also review us negatively if you must. But we'd appreciate a comment; it helps people discover the podcast. But anyway, this is John Ryan signing off for Chris Terrell. We'll talk to you later.